Yes, it's now 18 past 8 here on Radio Islam. It's time for the Big Picture program with Amy Dowji. We're crossing over to KwaZulu-Natal. We do have Uncle Amy with us on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you, Maulana Yusuf?
Alhamdulillah. How are you keeping, Uncle Amy?
Everything in Durban is always wonderful. Alhamdulillah, it's such a lovely day. I'm going off to Spingo Beach with my paddle ski.
Ah, nice, man. You're making us less on the side of the country.
That's the idea.
Well, at least we both not in Cape Town.
What's happening in Cape Town?
Last night.
yeah.
The story that caught your eye this week, Uncle Amy?
Well, let me just start with that one. Firstly, let me comment on the tamasha of last night.
Gee.
The upheavals in Parliament. And you know what? Let me admit that it was hugely entertaining. The opposition parties made a very clear case, very clear.
Gee.
They said repeatedly that the Constitutional Court had declared that Jacob Zuma had contravened the Constitution in a case that was brought before the Constitutional Court. So, therefore, Zuma had broken his oath of office, which was that he would uphold and protect the Constitution. So, therefore, the opposition concluded that because the oath was broken, he could not be in Parliament. It's like giving a talak. It's over.
Yeah.
Therefore, Zuma is disqualified to be a member of Parliament and therefore not even the President. That is what the opposition stated over and over again and said that this was the law, this was the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. The
right.
Speaker could not accept this, and so we had the disruption that we saw. And of course, Motabaji Yakub Zuma did not leave. He just sat there. What was his response? Well, the EFF was thrown out, and the DA walked out. Then the president gave, as expected, a very long and very boring speech, and the remaining MPs, I was watching them, they really battle to keep their eyes open. And you know what, Maulana, at last I understood why it's called Sona. Mujhe Sona hai. I have to sleep. Okay, and now to some wonderful news. Wonderful news to wake up to. Breaking news. My friend Donald Trump got one hell of a Uber clap, a nice big sounding one. What happened?
Sure.
Well, you all know about Donald's Muslim ban. Then a regional court said that his ban must be suspended. Donald was, of course, furious. He was unhappy and said that the so-called judge is wrong. So-called? How can you say that about the judge? He's a real judge. How can you say so-called judge? So he insulted the judge, and the White House took the whole thing to the Court of Appeals, and over the past few days, that court has been looking at whether the suspension of Donald's ban should be lifted. While they were looking at it, Donald tweeted that even a high school, say a bad student or a good student, would easily see that that the suspension was silly, meaning that the three judges of the appeals court should rule in his favor. It's very simple, according to him.
Yeah.
Well, the breaking news is that the Court of Appeals have just declared that the suspension of Trump's ban should stand. That's right, it should stand, meaning that there was no evidence to show that there was any urgent reason to stop Muslims from entering the United States. Isn't that wonderful, eh? But the war is not over. Not over yet. The White House is expected to take the case to the Supreme Court. And the whole thing will drag on for the next couple of months. But you know what? Everyone is shocked that Donald Duck has been attacking the judicial system in such a crude way. But that's Donald. Crude, a street fighter, rough and tumble. The Mampara actually thinks that he is still running his TV show, The Apprentice, when he told people, you are fired. You know, I said it before. He's like a 10-year-old lighty, getting all upset if he can't have his own way or if he doesn't win. You know, 10-year-old lighties, when they play some game or something and they lose, they get all fed up and start crying or have a tantrum. So this major club must have been quite hair-raising for him. Hair-raising. But I'll tell you a big secret about his hair a little later on. Very big secret. Anyway, in just 3 weeks, the Donald has capsized the White House. In 3 weeks, eh? Can you believe it?
Mm.
He's the president and Amazing. Should be concerned about world affairs. And what did he speak about a few days ago? Well, his daughter Ivanka has her own brand of clothing that is sold by a chain of departmental stores, clothing store called Nordstrom. The store announced that these Ivanka's clothes are not selling all that well, so they are going to drop her line of clothing. And Donald said, that is so bad, that because people don't like me, they take it out on my daughter. Mr. President, you're an Ulu. You should be worried about world affairs, and now you're worried about your daughter's clothing line. Anyway, let's move on here. And as usual, we begin with the crazy stories, the weird and wonderful stories that made it into the media.
See.
You know, as I always say, true life is often crazier than fiction. But when I came across a loony story that made it into the papers, whenever I come across such a story, by the time Friday comes, the WhatsApp Speedy Gonzalez, they just beat me to it. It's all over the place. Viral, Facebook, Instagram, etc. Now, this one was also posted a million times, I think, but I hope that most of you listeners haven't heard it. You know, I said it before and I'll say it again. I like the way the Saudis, they spend their money. Really.
See.
They really got style. Eh? You know, at first, I had to go online to check whether this particular story is true. I thought it was fake news. But then I found it in all the major news media and also saw a video on YouTube. A Saudi prince got onto a plane with some hand luggage. Well, not exactly hand luggage. He bought 80 seats for important guests that he brought with him. Members of the royal family. He brought 80 birds, falcons. They look like eagles, falcons.
Wow.
Yes, you heard that right, falcons, 80 seats. And these birds, of course, are highly prized and respected in the UAE. Falconeering is a great sport there and so on. So this bird brain, Mampara Prince, was traveling from one place to another, so he brought along his 80 falcons with him. So what do you think of that? You know what? I travel quite a lot. Quite a lot on planes. And sometimes I get very irritated when I'm trying to have a nap and a kid in the seat behind me keeps kicking at my seat or keeps poking at the TV screen behind my seat to change channels. You know, I feel like just throttling him. Or the guy in front who reclines his seat right down with his big smelly hair and everything, especially when it's meal time. But the worst one is a big size guy. He sits right next to me and his arm, like a half lamb, he takes over the whole armrest between us, or his fat arm overflows onto my side. You know, I sit there and I grit my teeth and I think that the airline must do something about this. They must maybe draw a line straight down the middle of the armrest and inform passengers that they must not cross the line. Or better still, I suggest that they must put some razor wire down the center, or maybe even an electric fence. All this goes through my head as I sit there fuming, and I really get irritated by these things. But I suppose more irritating would be sitting next to a bird that's looking at me in a very hungry way. So, what is it that irritates you, dear listeners? I'm sure one of the things is when a person eats very loudly, right? Also, you, Mola, I'm sure that you get very irritated.
See, true.
People eat very loudly.
Chew with their mouth open.
That, don't you? All that munching and crunching.
See.
You remember the old days when the Balis used to pour their tea into a saucer and slurp the whole thing?
Yeah, I can't forget it.
Well, you know, there are some people who become chronically affected. Now, this is serious stuff. Some people get chronically affected by people who eat loudly. It's actually, believe it or not, a medical condition. I read about it in a news article a few days ago, and here's what it says. Research has shown people who find sounds such as chewing, heavy breathing, or tapping of a pen unbearable may have a brain abnormality. The condition known as misophonia causes people to have an intense emotional reaction to certain trigger sounds. In a report published in the journal Current Biology, scientists said scans of misophobia sufferers found changes in the brain activity when a trigger sound was heard. Researchers found a difference in the emotional control mechanism that causes their brains to go into overdrive on hearing trigger sounds. Dr. Subinder Kumar from the Institute of Neuroscience at Newcastle University in the UK said, "This study demonstrates the critical brain changes as further evidence to convince a skeptical medical community that this is a genuine disorder." One misophonia sufferer said her GP laughed when she told him about her symptoms. Olana Tansley Hancock, 29 years old, from Ashford in Kent, was 8 years old when family meals became unbearable for her. She said, "The noise of my family eating forced me to retreat to my own bedroom for meals. I can only describe it as a feeling of wanting to punch people in the face when I hear the noise of them eating. And anyone who knows me will say that that doesn't sound like me at all." So, there you are. Getting hyper-irritated by someone chewing loudly could be a medical condition. Can you believe it, eh? And you know what? I wonder if I have a medical condition relating to something that's really, really irritating. You know what? You are at a big fancy wedding or a major walima, and there is lekker biryani. And after the meal, you go to wash your hands. And when you get to the sink, you see that someone before you gargled and left some traces of masoor and bits of meat in the sink. Yuck. That's so disgusting.
Disgusting.
Could it be that I am suffering from a medical condition? Maybe it'll be called dalophobia. Okay. Okay, also in today's paper, there was an article about my friend and yours, the blonde buffoon, Donald Trump. You know, I can't just escape him. You keep turning to him. This story is about his hair, as I promised. It's always a subject of jokes and wonderment. Some say it's a wig, but it turns out to be real. So how come at his age he has so much of hair? Well, hear this. Despite speculation that Donald Trump wears a wig, his doctor has confirmed that Donald still has his natural locks. Dr. Bornstein, who has treated the property tycoon for 36 years, revealed his famous patient takes a small dose of finasteride every day. What is this drug called finasteride? Well, it is finasteride is used to treat prostate problems in men, but also it also has side effects that it stimulates hair growth. The drug, which Trump takes in small doses, stops testosterone from converting into a hormone which causes male pattern baldness. But you know what? A warning to all you baldies out there, just in case you want to run off to your doctor to get a prescription, is another, shall I say, not so good side effect. That is... libidinous activity will be considerably reduced. Well, that's the most discreet explanation on this family radio station. But let's get serious, eh? Let's get serious. Trump signed an executive order banning Muslims from 7 countries. And you know what? This got me thinking. Really, this got me thinking. Sorry, the carburetor is a bit clogged this morning. You know, Iraq is one of the countries on the banned list. So, let's look at this. Donald is banning people from Iraq from entering the United States because they may carry out terrorist attacks. They may kill Americans. Right, good, okay. Well, in 1991, old man Bush bombed Iraq for 42 days. destroyed dams, water filtration plants, factories, electricity power stations, bridges, etc., and also killed 200,000 Iraqis. Then his son, the Shrub, in 2003, bombed Iraq based on a lie about weapons of mass destruction. It was therefore an illegal war, and George Jr. killed thousands and thousands. So, the United States killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. So, since then, many Iraqis went to the United States. How many Americans did Iraqis kill in the last 20, 30 years? How many? And the answer is none. Not a single one.
Mm.
And you know, to conclude that point, America had no visa to go and attack Iraq. But now, America denies a visa to Iraqis from entering the United States in case they attack Americans. You know, this could be so funny if it was not so tragic. And speaking about tragedies, Maulana, one of the greatest crimes against humanity was committed in Iraq by the United States. And every year I speak about it at this time. In 3 days' time will be the anniversary of a terrible atrocity that took place in a suburb of Baghdad 26 years ago. I will never, ever forget it.
Okay.
And I want you, dear listeners, to also remember it every year. And go right now and Google it. February 13th, 1991, a fateful day for the people of Iraq. A day of absolute horror. And it was the day before Eid. The day before Eid. I want to remember this great crime against humanity. I spoke about it last year. It still chokes me up when I speak about it. And as you all know, I have been to Iraq many times.
Right.
But each time I make it a point to visit the site of this terrible massacre. It's called the Al-Amariya Bomb Shelter Massacre. It took place within the 42 days when Old Man Bush was bombing Iraq. He started bombing on the 19th of January and continued for 42 days. And of course, the Al-Amariya bomb shelter was a large building, like a small town hall, in a suburb called Amariya in the north of Baghdad. It was a bomb shelter with walls that were 3 meters thick. The roof was made of mesh of steel and concrete, 2 meters thick. That was the roof. It was built by a Finnish company, a company from Finland, some years before. And the Finns gave the plans to the Americans. The weakest spot was in the roof. In the roof, there was a very narrow ventilation shaft. America knew that this was a civilian bomb shelter in a residential area. U.S. satellites could see that women and children were going in and out of the bomb shelter, especially at that time. It was the day before Eid. And this bomb shelter had 2 floors. The upper one was for sleeping and studying, socializing, sharing meals. The basement had the kitchens and the medical center. You know, as I'm speaking to you, Maulana, I remember it's something of a coincidence that I spoke to you about this a few years ago.
Yeah, it's possible. Possible, G.
So, the upper floor had the basement had the kitchens and the medical center. It was a safe place for the Iraqis. The women and children, boys over the age of 15 did not stay there, so that the women could have privacy. On the 13th of February, was the day, as I said before, many people were there in their cooking and wrapping presents. It was a festive atmosphere. Then at 4 a.m. on the 13th of February, just before Fajr, two American F-117 stealth bomber planes flew over the Al-Amariya bomb shelter. The first plane dropped a laser-guided missile that was twirling like a drill. It was like a drill. As it was falling, it was twirling around. And it drilled through the ventilation shaft in the roof and exploded on the top floor. Then 5 minutes later, the second plane dropped a 2,000-pound bomb through the huge hole in the roof, and that exploded. The people on the top floor were burned to death. The water tanks exploded. The water temperature of them was 400 Celsius, and it flowed down, boiling, steaming water flowed into the basement, and the people there were literally boiled to death. The 1 meter thick steel doors automatically closed shut because of the vacuum, and they were turned red hot. Can you imagine 1 meter thick steel doors were red hot? Firemen who arrived there just stood by helplessly, hearing the agonizing screams from inside. They could do nothing. No one knows how many people were in there. Estimates say that 450 to 1,000. Why estimates? Because most of the bodies were burnt beyond recognition. When firemen eventually got in, they were just picking up big lumps of flesh, unrecognizable lumps of flesh. I saw photos of this. You can see it also yourself. Put the words Al-Amariya massacre and you'll see the ghastly photos. At first, the United States said that this was a command center of Saddam Hussein. And after a very long time, they finally admitted that it was a mistake. Mistake! Mistake! Imagine if Saddam stood up in his trial and said, okay, I did all of this thing, but hey, it was a mistake. What if the Nazis said the same thing? What if they said, no, it's just one big, terrible mistake? As I said, I went to Al-Amariya bomb shelter many times after it was bombed, many years, but I will never forget my first visit. I went with a group. We were traveling all over the Middle East, the first visit. And as I walked in, at first my eyes couldn't focus properly. The inside, there were huge rooms there and they were all burnt black, the walls were black. Then, as my eyes focused, I saw photographs lined up of all those who were killed. Photos were hung on the walls. Families came and hung the photos there. And as we walked, it was so shocking, mainly of women and children and little babies. We all walked very silently through the building. Then we came into the center of the building. And it was brightly lit up. Sun was streaming through the massive hole the size of a room, massive hole in the thick concrete in the roof, twisted metal. You can't imagine the horror we felt as we imagine a bomb coming through there. Gee. We had a guide telling us all about what happened there. Her name was Umreida. We followed her. We walked silently. We smelled death in the air. It was an absolutely suffocating feeling. Umreida stopped and she pointed at one silhouette on the wall, a woman carrying a baby burnt into the wall. We walked.
Allah.
I pointed to some things on the ceiling. There were tiny little blobs, like jelly blobs, on the ceiling. Umreida explained. She said that there were bunk beds right up to the top and the children were sleeping on the bunk beds, and when the bomb exploded, They were flung onto the ceiling, and what we were looking at was the eyeballs of little children.
Hmm.
You know,
so sad.
I was in tears throughout the shocking tour of the shelter. And when we came out, we followed Umreda to a small caravan. And that was her office, and she showed us many photos there. Then she told us to sign the visitor's book. And I was just talking to her. We all were listening. I asked her to... And as I spoke to her, there was a shocking revelation. Umreda had left her daughter in the shelter, her daughter Reda, and her other 8 children and her husband. And she went very quickly to a home to fetch something. And then the bombs fell. And she ran back desperately, but the big steel doors were shut. She screamed and screamed and screamed, but she could do nothing. She tried to open the doors, but they were red hot. Her daughter, eventually, when she found her, was just a lump of flesh. I was speechless when she told me this. Totally speechless. So, I can't continue. That was the atrocity carried out by the United States, and no one has been brought to justice. America killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, but refuses to give them a visa, although no Iraqi went to America to kill even a single American. When you get some red roses on the 14th for Valentine, forget about the silly occasion and let the red of the roses remind you of the innocent blood that was spilled on that terrible day 26 years ago, 13th of February, at Al Amariya. Are you there, Maulana?
Gee, really, it's touching. Really touching, Uncle Amy.
I got tears flowing down. But we have to end. And how do we end?
The light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, isn't that funny? The tears rolling, but we have to do the light at the end of the tunnel. And we will. There were three rats, gundans, were sitting and having coffee at the cafe here in Durban on the beachfront.
Right.
Now, each one was bragging about how tough and brave he is. And the first one, of course, these are Indian gundans, right? The first one says, "Hey, I'm very tough, man. I'm very tough. One day I took a whole bag of rat poison and swallowed it." And the second one said, "Eh, that's nothing, man. Once I was caught in a rat trap. I used my teeth to bust the whole thing open." The third rat was looking bored. He says, "You know what? You guys are talking silly things and you really irritate me. So I'm going home right now. I'm going to give the cat a tight clap and then go to bed." Okay, here's the last one. Sabir Jazbai was walking out of the courtroom with his client. He's a lawyer for Sabir Jazbai.
All right.
He's walking out of the courtroom with his client, Shadrach. And Sabir asked him, "Now that you have been acquitted, that you won the case, tell me honestly, did you steal the car?" And Shadrach answered, "Hey, boss, you did such a good job in there that now I am starting to think that maybe I really didn't steal the car." Well,
so thank you for that, Uncle Evie. Really, once again, good insight and thought-provoking words.
I can
from
feel that you were touched by this story, Maulana.
Really, it was. Jazakallah for me. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make it easy for the Muslims around the
world. Ameen. Inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.